Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock on the west coast of the North American hemisphere. And we are working our way through The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. I don't know how to encapsulate where we are in our work with this book, but it's important. Where we are now is we're actually going beyond the sense of we're not in an intellectual understanding mode anymore. All right? We're actually trying, we are working together experientially to discover something together in our group work. So the most important part of that is to come to the class, to get to the class, to leave the road dust behind, that which, you know, you were rapidly doing, and put in the time to come here. And I don't know, Hawk Lady, is Hawk Lady on? Hawk Lady's not on. And Ari, are you on the phone? She may or may not be on the phone. But so this evening, attempt to be a little bit sensitive, not only to the space itself, but to changes within the space. All right? So we will notice changes as the space, there will be fundamentally different changes in it. And so note those. Note those as part of our work together. All right? Good. And Hawk Lady, pay attention. You were very sensitive last week too, but pay attention to, because you made comments after, to the changes in the nature of the space. That's the first, those are the first signs that we have about how to navigate in the Bardos. What we're trying to do is learning skills that we need throughout our existences in life, in transit, in the Bardos, in rebirth. These are skills that we need. And we need those skills to learn how to navigate. Different traditions speak very, very, use very different language. For instance, I'm reading a little bit with good guidance from Aria on, I'm reading The Art of Dreaming by Castaneda. And in Castaneda, then Bonwan speaks about the dreamer, and then he speaks about this technology of in how to move within the dream world. Well, that's that tradition. In this tradition, we are working with the idea of recognizing the Bardo space and moving within it in an appropriate manner. We are in that space. And when we open ourselves and allow ourselves to be in this space, when we allow ourselves to be in this space, which requires a certain form of surrender. And the surrender, Silverdale and I have had extensive conversations about this particular point. And this point, one of the points is a form of relaxation. Do you recall that, Silverdale?
Absolutely. Critical to absolutely relax the physical body in order to allow the inner sensation to surface.
And Susan, you and I spoke about that yesterday, I think, briefly. And the idea is that there are multiple forms of tension that are in us. Like, for instance, today I was in a situation. I was by myself, and there was just a stream of thought patterns going on. Well, I'm in the middle of a very busy time during my practice, my work. And I noticed, and this is really interesting too, Silverdale, I noticed that at the heart of that stream was a tension, literally what appeared to be a physical tension. Only when I could penetrate that tension and unravel it, like you're saying, and then that thought chain started to dissipate a little bit. Okay? So we need to look for the tensions that are there when we're working to surrender. And by surrender here, I'm talking about a very active, powerful form of work. This is not passive. That's hard work, this kind of surrender. Okay?
We're really trying to establish an equilibrium between that inner force, which represents our essential self, and the pacification of the human biology, the electrical force of the totality of the planetary body.
And we were given that gift. We were given the gift of a body, and we're on this planet at this particular time. I mean, we're right here, right now. We're not here in the 17th century Holland or something, right? We're right here in 21st century Western culture that we are involved in. That's where we found ourselves. And then in finding ourselves there, each of us was born in a very distinct and different locality. But then guess what? Here we are many years later, and we found ourselves, didn't we? We found each other. We found each other, and we've come together now. So because we found each other and we have come together, then let's honor that and honor that work. Okay? What I'd like, I mean, I'll tell you where we stop, but what I'd actually like you to do, if you would please, is to,
make sure.
Yeah, turn your phone off, please. We're on chapter 10.
Yeah.
We didn't do very well in terms of distance.
Well, we were busy,
okay. So we're on chapter 10, and do you want to go ahead and read the header again, and get us oriented.
The lightning rod function. If one can determine the present posture of the absolute, one is able, by the principle of resonance, to assume this posture and, with an awakened biological machine, act as a lightning rod, but consciously.
We're having a technical tapping problem. Okay. Maybe it is the phone. Yeah.
Let's see. I'll start again.
Begin again.
We'll see. If one can determine the present posture of the absolute, one is able, by the principle of resonance, to assume this posture and, with an awakened biological machine, act as a lightning rod, consciously send across, and momentarily change places with the absolute.
Okay. So we talked about that briefly last week. We talked in terms of getting ourselves to a position where we are able to hold, we're able to hold more and more of this electrical energy. And I know that some individuals are working diligently to do that. It's just something you practice and you work with. And we understood, there was a fine comment from Aria last time about when you are in that position and there's a certain form of surrender, you can feel a certain kind of burning sensation, a pain almost. It's like it, and you can liken it to a certain pain of not only of yearning, if there's a yearning for something, and your heart is open to that, and in that yearning there's a particular kind of pain. And I think, if I remember correctly, do you remember what you said, Aria? Are you on the phone? Maybe not.
She's on mute.
I have a comment, David, just that's, you're reminding me of that I know, remembering from years, long in the past, years and years in the past, some very painful experiences of mine, very, very uncomfortable psychological states.
Yes.
In retrospect, I see them as, they clearly involve burning karma, like burning off a lot of impurities. It was very unpleasant at the time.
This is where we're at. When as George is saying, is the balance between these two electrical bodies begins to shift us slightly more toward the idea of the essential self being more prominent, more energetic can come in, and guess what? At that point, the human biological machine starts to go through a cleansing process, but it's a radiational cleansing. It's not psychological.
Mm-hmm.
The psychological is an adjunct to it. It's not the focus.
Well, what I'm thinking of is all that process. In ordinary language, things that were important or influential or loomed very large in life became quite transparent and insignificant. You know, things changed in significance and scale and so on.
So we bring ourselves to a different viewpoint, and when we're standing in a different viewpoint, the whole world actually will look different, will actually look different, and in fact, it will be different. You will actually be in a different dimension.
We have a comment from Aria.
Aria, go ahead.
She says, learn to love the burn. It reminds me, if starting to exercise and you get to the burn in your body where you start building muscles, the itch isn't burning. You have to suffer through it to build the muscle. We are building energetic muscle. Equals presence.
Correct. Well said. So that's very well said and well put. What we're doing is we're actually allowing this angelic, energetic body called the essential self to come forth and to start playing a role suddenly. It's starting to play a role. Later on, we can talk about the new master that comes. The new master arrives, and that's what we're aiming toward. And what Aria is telling us is that don't fool yourself. There's work involved. Oh, maybe that's why it's called the work. So it takes a little work. Like, my gosh, it's worth the stretch. That's the point. It's worth the stretch to have that as part of our life. Okay? Okay, we're going to start. We ended on page 96 at the very bottom of the paragraph. So we're beginning, we're just going to take that over. We ended with, before we actually attempt to perform prayer absolute, we can increase the machine's endurance, first by repeated awakening. Okay, that's where we ended. And then by invocation of beings of only slightly higher dimensions. So we are doing invocation. This is an invocation. But we're
David, can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
They're saying that the tapping is very disruptive. Roach, and they're thinking that maybe phone people should be on mute when they're not talking.
No, we're gonna change a mic.
They think it might be
mic. There's something in the hookup of
it's me
equipment here.
So you're very disruptive today.
I thought David might be launching a new practice of conscious mumbling tonight.
We're going to be putting we're putting me on pause for the moment. Different cable, different mic.
We don't hear tapping on the phone.
No, is there tapping on the? Do you hear tapping now?
I don't hear it on the phone at all.
Nor do I.
Just on the button.
Different mic stand too.
Okay, well here I'm going to speak on my mic.
Ask Mark Roach.
In regard to, tell me if you hear tapping now. This is the Facebook page from where we are here. It has this diagram of the universe as a mirror image of God, which is very suggestive.
Mark, do you hear tapping now, or is it?
Any tapping on that?
Sounds fine.
Okay, well then, yeah, we're working on probably, David's mic.
It was just probably this setup then here.
Looks like it's good to go.
You said what?
They're not hearing it on the phone.
No, I think it was...
The phone people aren't hearing it.
They want to ask if the phone mic is close to touching the telephone.
Everybody has already asked that on this end, too.
Okay.
And
it doesn't appear to be touching at all.
It's actually not physically touching at all. And is there still tapping?
You need to test David's new mic.
Talk lady says there isn't. Who said? There's
maybe
not.
We need a buffered mic.
Do we have, we're okay now?
Yeah.
I think we got it, Harry. Okay. Well, let's keep going then. All right. So now we're moving into the next section of the chapter, the bottom paragraph, page 96, and let's see if we can make a little bit of progress here. If the effects of prayer absolute are so unpleasant, what will encourage us to proceed on this path? The feeling which produces in us a powerful inner urge to continue to help the absolute in spite of the negative effects of prayer absolute on our machines is called
Baraka.
Baraka, which is another word for objective conscience. It's an interesting thing because as you go forward, you have to pay more. You have to pay more, but you get more back. It's a little bit like the, what is it, the carrot and the stick method. We must remember during the invocation of the Absolute that, to the Absolute, infinite chaos is order, and the passage of linear time, the reality of objects, and the visual and sensational phenomena of identity exists only mathematically. So these are very high conceptual ideas. From that point of view, we're not in that point of view. We don't live in that point of view. But we have to have a little bit of a sense, and I think this is, you know, I want to challenge Ari a little bit here too. When you start to move into the sensation of chaos, there is fear. But chaos, like when you operate in chaos, it's okay. If you have your navigational sense about you, you'll know when to make turns and so on and so forth. But there's a chaotic element to it. But in the root of chaos is creation, right? Out of chaos comes creation, and out of chaos is creativity in a more mundane sense. It's that's when we are standing and I don't know, truly, that's when you can discover things. Okay? So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. I'm going to just skip some of this, the Solomon seal stuff. Is there anything there you want to specifically go over? We're going to just jump ahead. I'm going to jump ahead to page 100 then, unless somebody wants to discuss that interplay between the energies flowing up and flowing down right now. Right now, we're just trying to hold the space and allow some of that energy to flow into us and to become in an awakened state so that we're available for something, for that invocation.
I just like the part about the invocating posture.
Go ahead and read that. Where are you?
In the middle of page 100.
Oh, yeah, I was going to, yeah.
Going to read through there?
Yeah, I was going to.
Yeah, we're going to read through there.
Yeah, I was going to start with luckily.
Oh, yeah, that's where.
See? Two great minds, right? Luckily for ordinary man, the machine can easily avoid accidental invocation. This is assured by its nonstop, completely mechanically proceeding associative thoughts. We all know that point, right? We all know when we're locked into these associative thoughts, black moods, negative manifestations. Even when the machine does happen to stop for a moment, it generally assumes a slouching posture of indolent relaxation, arms and legs crossed or feet thrown across the desk. Nowhere near an invoking posture. Now, what does that mean? Well, you can discover your particular invoking posture. Like, for instance, let's say you have three dogs and you have to deal with those dogs all the time. If you're outside yourself and you're in that mess, that's one thing. But if you can wake yourself up for a moment, you'll see yourself physically moving in a different manner. You'll move with a little form of elegance. Even if you're like sick and you're ill and this, you've hurt the leg or something like that, and if that's what you concentrate on, you'll be in that's truly in an external posture. But if you can find an internal posture at that place where you are actually inward, you will feel a different posture. Once you can discover that posture, you can go back to it. Susan, you were talking about finding a posture when you were resting whereby it was just right. You remember that? That conversation we had where you felt in this, just in kind of pure presence. And there's an inner posture that you can take, and when you're in that inner posture, you can find it again. It's a way of getting back to that space. Does this make sense to people? I should pause here.
The comments, Dan? I was going to say that there are, I think this term of the invoking postures, for instance, the movements, you know, the movements are clearly a set of invoking postures, but I think this also means that there's, you know, in a state of both, you know, the slouching with your feet up and all that is suggesting, like, you know, there's both an inner and an outer alertness or awareness or sensitivity, which I think is what David's talking about. But this also reminds me of a story that, you know, EJ had a story that EJ told many years ago about he had a colleague that he's always called Saint Mike, who's, you know, just a guy that he came up with somewhere in the military or something or other. And, you know, this guy also got into the work somehow or into the spiritual path. And he said when he was talking once about Saint Mike, he said, well, Saint Mike is always smoking cigarettes. And he's in these spaces, the Bardo spaces, he's basically saying when Saint Mike is in work spaces and in invocational spaces, for some reason it's his posture to have a cigarette. So, which is to say, you know, my the posture that's invocational for me, apart from certain standard postures like the movements or something, but there may be like my invocational posture for my the chamber that I work in.
Okay, so
to say in yours for you, and Susan has others and so on.
Susan does. So my point is, find that invocational posture.
Could you close the
close
door,
the door.
For the sound.
So the point is to find that invocational posture. I want to ask, actually, does that make sense to you? Right now, if you recall and you reflect on yourself, can you find an invocational posture that works for you? I was going to ask Aria, because I happen to know, and Hawk Lady, I know. So they said yes. So reflect on that particular posture. Susan, are you still there?
I'm having trouble, but I'm here. And
okay,
I
buddy,
can,
you don't, you're okay.
But
and we
I
have
can,
Dan here to read the log if we need to, okay?
Okay, so if I disappear, I do.
Yeah, just be good with it. I know Susan has found such a posture. And
yeah, there's several different postures
that work for her. So
that allow the energy to flow, I guess, is the best way. Because I like how he kind of jokingly said, there's no way you're going to accidentally fall into it because we're all closed up and closing our arms and closing the energy off. And
right.
And so,
you'll notice,
you know, just to hold your posture, just to sit up straight brings a certain element of alertness that works for me.
That last one that you described to me the other day, do you have a minute to describe it again to the group?
Well, I was describing how I guess it's a newly found thing where I'm able to just sit with myself and like the mind stopped and I quit worrying about all of the body stuff and I don't know, I just felt very comfortable and just very present. And then there was nothing to do except just be in that space.
Right.
So there was nothing to do.
But it was, the space was filled because of the energetic that you were in. Can you find that posture again, like maybe tomorrow?
Yes, I could.
Yes, she, did you hear that?
I did.
Yes,
I did,
she can.
I could. I will, I do.
She's discovered a specific that she can go to that is called an invoking posture, excuse me. So each of us have that. Now, the interesting thing is to discover it in motion as well. You
mm-hmm.
discover it
well,
in
motion. Well, and Aria says for her what it is.
Yeah, to read Aria's then, please.
She said, it's more mood for me. I think that
okay.
allows the energy to flow. It's a clamminess, a state of being that I recognize. And she also said sometimes lying, sitting, walking, but mood is most important for her posture.
So what Aria is telling us, and it's always good, would be good to hear her say it too from time to time. But
she
what
said
she's
calmness.
Telling us.
Calmness, not clamminess.
Calmness, yeah. I think I got that for some reason.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a inner posture that's also reflected in a physical posture.
Mm-hmm.
If something that is becoming more second nature to you, you can find your way there either way. You'll find your way by placing your posture in a certain way or by finding it internally, which will help you find the external posture as well. Does this ring true, George?
Absolutely. For myself, I mean, I just throw a switch because I have so much practice at it, but I can be almost in any physical posture, mental. I mean, there's a number of combinations that have to be aligned, but after that, it just instantaneously appears.
So for him and for Susan and for Aria and Hawk Lady and some others, they have found specific signatures that they can go to. And their voyaging ability allows them to travel to that signature. And as Silverdale's telling us, he throws like throwing a switch. And then the physical posture becomes secondary. Okay, so that's a lot of what this part of this chapter is, has to do with this idea of finding these invoking postures and adopting them. So these are help, these are ways and means of working for each of us. So either you become sensitive to your inner posture in such a way that you can find it that way, but then you have the help of knowing a particular physical posture will help you too. We did extensive work years ago when Ivan was younger. It was a long time ago. And I was younger as well. And at that time, we did a great deal of work with the movements. And occasionally you'll see, I think there's a number of videos on the movements and things
videos.
Like that.
Yeah.
But in the movements are so different than ordinary slouchy life that it kind of forces you into a different thought pattern. And as Harry, I think, said last week or in one of his writings, he talked about the yoga postures.
Mm-hmm.
There's the physical yoga posture. Well, it reminds me of something. There's a physical yoga posture, but then there's an inner yoga posture. I recall being in Boulder watching a performance of somebody doing movements, and the person was technically perfect. But I had no inspiration to it because the individual did not find that inner posture. Make sense? So we have to find that inner clarity.
Yeah, whereas the thing, there's a phenomenon that happens in some performances, which is similar to what Harry's story about sitting with the lawyers and accountants, that somebody who's doing very invocational movements or dance work can affect the consciousness of an entire audience. Message there?
I didn't get there was a message. Turn the web.
You're going to try changing mics again?
Okay. Is it still happening?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway, this thing, the other thing is that a very potent element of the movements, I think what was so valuable about practice, a moving centrum practice like that, is that I can remember, finding out, or how would you call it, having the experience of awareness or consciousness follows posture. In other words, that, as David was saying, there are certain movements where I would not do them right, or it wouldn't feel right, or it wouldn't click. And then certain postures, you actually get this movement. You
get it.
I'm trying to think of what it is, duplicating. You're watching, for instance, Tabitha here was one of the very fine demonstrators of the movements, and there are a couple other people who are very good at it, Kelly Rivera, for instance. But I actually would get, click into this certain posture, and it actually would change my mental state. In other words, I would feel this idea that there's an invocational posture. You can experience that with the movements.
So you had
it's very powerful. Yeah.
So once again, you had the movement that could help you get there. and you have the inner posture to help you get to the movement.
Yeah, well, a big part of what's happening is that I think it's like making the inner outer or the outer inner. You're completely tying up your machine attention of watching the moving center.
We did the...
you're concentrating.
Do you remember doing the Afghani rhythmics?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. So the Afghani rhythmics were a very complex form of mutual dancing together. And they were feet movements, hand movements, body postures, and it was like too complex to know how to do it.
Yeah, right. You couldn't think your way into it.
You couldn't think your way through it. But after a while, and I can recall several instances right now where we fell into that, I fell into the space and I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing it with Tommy and some others that were very good at helping us find the inner space. So, in any event...
We also have a comment.
Please, Susan, thank you.
From Hawk Lady. She said, for my mood, at the time of my physical posture, I pay attention to my physical body and then my heart chakra. If that doesn't work, then I remember this class and tap into that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is an individual that is, Hawk Lady then is an individual that's developing ways and means, tools. She has tools now. She has an actual tool belt for her own personal invocation. She knows how to operate it.
Mm-hmm.
This one doesn't work, I'll go here. That doesn't work, I'll go here. And it's developing that tool belt that allows you to be facile in the world. To be, and this is what we call, this is, in my opinion, though I'm not an expert in this area, this is what I call being a true shapeshifter. Is Simon on, by the way?
Well, and Silverdale says, after a lot of practice, we gradually develop the ability to invoke easily and at will.
Practice.
So we flip it from being, gosh, why am I asleep all the time? I'm asleep. I couldn't remember. To gradually, the sleep becomes something. I was actually in Toronto. Is Vadir on right now, by the way? Good. Welcome. And it was nice to meet you, by the way, Vadir and Jonathan as well. And I was up there, and I was asked, there was a particular group that I was invited to, and I was asked to speak to the group. And what I realized is that I'd gotten to a point, I don't know how to say this exactly, but I'd gotten to a point where when I could feel the machine starting to go into a particular kind of sleep, it woke me up. It was the reminding factor itself.
Yeah, that's like the chronic problem.
And it was partly a posture, a physical thing, but I could feel it had a smell to it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a scent. Okay? It was like an inner scent. For me, smell is a very potent thing. It's a very potent element in invocation. But it's not necessarily the smell like you think about it with the essential oils. So the essential oils and good incense are reminding factors, but it's more of a like when you smell like ions, you know, it's something like that.
Like the quality of the air.
The quality of the air. You can kind of like suddenly you can sniff it, and that's something. Yeah, go ahead. Dan's going to read a few comments.
Her back, Hawkley says her back has to be straight and all chakras aligned.
Jim H.
Jim H. says the same sensing energy flow up the spine and out. Dan? Sending energy out instead of holding on to it. Yeah.
Good. Good, Jim.
A lot of practice, we gradually develop the ability to invoke easily and at will. Yeah, that's a lot of practice, I would say.
Hello back.
The deer says hello.
Jumping ahead a little bit, just to, anyone is capable of discovering invoking postures just by following the basic instructions for awakening the machine. And that's what we've seen here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine Pathworld, I think, is on tonight. But Pathworld is an interesting individual. This is somebody that for 15 years, and Pathworld, tell me if I'm close, I think that's about right, has been hosting a labyrinth walk once a month, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
15 years. Mm-hmm. When she walks, by this time, I would imagine when she glances at the labyrinth, it's a big labyrinth. It's on her property. I've seen it dozens of times. When she glances at it, that's an invoking posture. And when she invites individuals into it, the moment she steps in the first step into that labyrinth, boom, something will happen for her. That's called practice.
Well, this sounds like it has the quality of eternal return.
It's eternal return, and it's not only that, it's persistence and practice, as George was telling us. You have to keep at it. For some reason, and we don't need to know that reason, she has so stuck with it. The thing of beauty. Okay, we can find that. Now, I'm going to read this next paragraph, but I've written a note by it, which I'll tell you in a minute. If you've ever actually been struck by lightning or stuck a finger into an electrical socket, you're well on your way to being able to recognize an invocational posture when you assume one. If you feel the same sensation again, but your finger is not presently inserted into an electrical shock, you can be reasonably sure that one way or another, you have assumed the correct posture. I say it's a little dramatic, but it certainly makes the point. And we will feel the energy. We'll feel that energy flowing, and we want to feel it, because that starts to tell us that we're a little bit on the right path, where our direction is correct. Our directional finders are okay. Once we've discovered how unpleasant the sensations are, back to Arya's comment, if conscience is not very strong in us, we are free from the call of Baraka. You ever read that phrase again? Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
If conscience is not very strong in us, if we are free from the call of Baraka, we can always just quit and seek the pleasures of life. But for some of us, we don't have that. We are stuck by a certain form of conscience, and Baraka does operate. The world is the only world there is. This world is the only world there is. That's, in a certain way, I understand the idea of multiple dimensions and all of that, but this is our portal. This is the portal we're working on.
Right.
Okay? That's okay. And then jumping ahead, this is huge, but the angel of death, who is also sometimes seen as the angel of the Lord, is the absolute itself, momentarily descending. For those who are unprepared, that is, whose machines have not evolved in the sense that the higher centrums have activated themselves and formed as the higher emotional and mental bodies, even this momentary descent causes immediate death. So there's just a lot of energy. And sometimes you're not in a position to buffer it out. But that's rare, and that's we're not in that particular position. But let me just say that I know that that could occur. If we learn to consciously die before we die, the angel of death is a friend. And as the absolute descends upon us, we will not automatically die. And I was introduced to this idea again yesterday by someone visiting from the Bay Area. And she said that in death, we are also, in a sense, connected with our masters. We're connected in the higher bardo sense with those higher beings. And then it is a friendly thing, that's a friendly portal to that. But our work right now is on this plane, but we need to know how all of that works. My goodness. Socrates, when he was asked the purpose of his philosophy, replied that he was practicing dying. We know that he periodically entered states which were estranged to his contemporaries. And he was probably practicing prayer absolute. And then jumping ahead, we must prepare the machine for the invocation of the absolute, knowing that when the spirit of the absolute descends upon it, the machine will momentarily die, by which I mean the machine will swoon into a momentary death. Because that's transit. And the sensation of transit is a form of like dying, because you're dying from one space to the next space. And embrace that. It's okay. And there will be a momentary fear there. And that fear is okay. It's okay to do that, but just you have to just allow yourself, acquiesce to it. The ancients had a saying, and if you look at the summary that Arya did with Dan, you'll see this comment, no one sees God and lives. This actually has two meanings. One meaning is that no one can stand before the face of God and survive organically. The other meaning is literal, that no one, a nothingness, is able to see God and live, because someone who has realized what it is to say made real his own nothingness has already lost faith, meaning one's sense of personal identity. So no one is able to see God.
Yeah. As in, I am the voidness of the void.
I am the voidness of the void. And when you are the voidness of the void, then you are no one. And when you are in the space called I am no one, then you can be in that space. And that reminds us, of course, of the story of Odysseus and the Cyclops, Polyphemus. And he tricked him by calling him, he said his name was No One. And No One. Can you become No One? Can you actually become No One and allow yourself to be in the space called no one? Because that requires that we start to give up our self. We allow the self to be transcended. I'm going to tell a little story. So I was up visiting this guy, this teacher actually up in the Seattle area. And he was very potent, very potent. He was very much in the Indian. He was giving darshan, so it was like more in the Hindu tradition. And darshan, and he said that after he got after he got to a certain level of his work, and he realized that the only thing, the next step, was giving up his self. That had to be given up. And in a sense, he says, that was taken from him. And then he was able to function as he did. These are very heady things, but it's good to talk about them. It actually is good to talk about it and reflect on that state, because we can sense it. We can sense that state. Okay. Anything, Dan?
That's from Silverdale. First, again, a woman can
pacify.
Can inherently pacify herself
by intention
for invocation.
For a man,
he must learn to pacify himself. To surrender.
So this is talking about a form of surrender. And it doesn't come naturally to men. And men must learn to do that in the way men learn to do that. And it may be that it's inherent in women to know how to be in that space. We understand this. These are not stereotypes I'm talking about, but active, conscious activity that individuals do. We're not talking about stereotypical formulations here. These are conscious movements. Good.
Jim H. says, if I were a true warrior, today would be a good day to die.
So he has found that space. He's found that space of being, for the moment, being no one. And because he can be in that space, he's transparent, and there's nothing there. And when nothing is there, then he can see that which he could not see before. Angels, I'm on 103 toward the top. Angels are often called messengers of God. This is a stupid mistake made by philosophers who either never knew an angel or have never been an angel. Some angels function as intermediaries between the earth and the absolute, but intermediaries in the sense of a conductor, not a messenger. So recall this, that when we talk about, you know, the angelic invocation of some sort, we're not talking about something you can write home about. We're talking about a entity, in a sense, that is a conductor of higher electrical activity. All right. This is not a, I saw my angels. No, this is like allowing yourself to invite the angel in that is a form of a conductivity that allows you to enter into a different space. These spaces are very high spaces that we're talking about. If you look at the tree of life, we're down at the very bottom, Ivan. Malkuth, okay?
Earth dominions.
Yeah, and some of the first paths up are enough to stop us. You know, let alone even the idea of conceiving of getting to a place like Tiphereth or something like that. We're at the beginning of the beginning, but that's where we are. We're at the beginning of the beginning, and once again, recall, we have found ourselves together in this space, this evening, tonight, doing this. So that's more accurate to consider these angelic invocations that some of you have talked about. Consider them in a sense, or these higher ascended masters, as a sense of a conductor. Think of it like that, and of yourself as being the recipient of that conductor. And I know that certain individuals understand this idea directly. Each angel is a specialist whose attributes are fixed in a special repertoire of postures, once again, right? Moods, as Hawk Lady was telling us, and contemplations. For example, Kasiel is an expert in one of the postures of the Absolute, which the Absolute need not assume because Kasiel, according to his nature, performs this function. There's just some stuff that we can't let go.
Well, yeah, this is a long chapter.
It's a long chapter, and I strongly urge you to go onto the website and look at the fine summary that's there. But I think we're gonna start to slow it down here on page 103, right after that, because I'm not sure I want to get into the next.
We're going to stop at "Are you able to tell now?"
Yeah.
If your machine is awake or asleep in the real sense of the word.
Yeah. And we're going to stop there because that's a whole other topic. And I don't know if anybody saw the email I sent out, but I sent an email out, and in the email I said, "Who am I? Know thyself." And how do you begin to know thyself? Well, you have to put some time into that, unfortunately. Who are you? If you sit there long enough on that and you reflect, like, let's just say you sit, like I did I took this on for about several months. I just would sit almost every day a couple, and I'm just, well, who am I? Oh, that's easy. I'm David. Well, wait a minute, that did quite work. I'm the guy sitting here, right? That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. And then you just keep going like that. Like, I couldn't quite find, like, who am I? Like, where is the I that some of my dear, dear friends would say, oh, that's David. What's that signature? That is that? What is that? And is it, you know, my left arm, my foot, my toenail? All of those were candidates, by the way, as I went through my study. I determined that that wasn't the case. And I kept getting to this place where it was like there wasn't anything there. It kept being more and more nothing that was there was an absolute signature. It says, oh, there it is. It was more, as Susan said, it was just this sense of presence that has a specific signature to me. And that signature manifests in a certain way into the world. It manifests in a particular way, and it's in that fulfillment of that manifestation and that starts to become that signature. And I believe I've just barely begun to find out what that is. And it's a lovely discovery to get there. And once you begin to have a sense of what that is, then other things are possible. But it's all too close. Dan, is there more that needs to be read?
MH says anything impermanent is not I.
Right. As Silverdale has said many times, there's a particular signature, harmonic signature in a sense, a vibratory sensation that is, it's at the core of who I am. But go ahead. I am that which remains, as Lucian says. I am not that, Arya worked with the I am not that. This is a very difficult one because it gets very frightening when you get to a point when you start working with I am not that. And you actually have a certain honesty about it, like I am not that, I am not that. And then, well, what are you left with? Well, the ego has a lot of ideas about what you're left with. The ego is very happy to state, I am this.
Mm-hmm.
Very pleased, but maybe it's something different. I worked with another guy named Richard Rose many years ago, who was a very interesting fellow. And he said something similar to that. He says, maybe you don't know what the truth is, but you can retreat from untruth. You can retreat from untruth because you can sense what is untrue. And you can go there. But I'm going over time again, and I know some people are up very late. I appreciate that as well. But also there was some comments on the website about the lost works, and we've asked Ivan to come specially to address that issue this evening.
Uh-oh. Well, I posted an answer there for Harry, and I forget whether I wrote in it. I'd be surprised if Harry doesn't have this spiral-bound copy of the Lost Works, but that is showing on the website, idhhb.com, under books, and we just don't have it on Gateways for some reason.
It's not on Gateways, but people can order it?
Yeah, it's there as a spiral-bound. We don't have this beautiful limited edition hardcover book was done in an edition of 100 or 125 years ago, and those are all gone, you know, those were all sold. But we have this camera ready, so it's made as a facsimile, a Xerox copy, spiral bound, and I know many people out there have it.
Can they see this?
And that is where, Ivan?
It's idhhb.com.
Okay.
Under books,
yeah.
You know, there's a button on the left-hand side that says books, and that has some, I think, limited edition art books. Some of EJ's newer books, you know, there's some duplication with Gateways, but the Lost Works, since it's actually not a commercially published book, that's actually why it's not on Gateways. It's not a paperback or a bookstore book. It's a private edition still. And David's
showing mine. Mine is one of 250.
Oh, okay, so maybe 200. Yeah.
My cover, something happened to it.
He lost his cover.
It happens a lot.
I see, okay.
It happens a lot. We worked a lot with this. We worked with the sacrifices, chapter 4, Jim H. and others, if you have this.
Someone else had a question as to whether the Avatar's handbook, I believe, was in there.
Is it the table of contents? It's the first chapter.
Yeah, the content, of course, the formatting is different and so on, but I believe the entire content of those two little booklets of the Avatar's Handbook is in here. So you can read the text.
And, Harry, if you get a copy, chapter 9 is on group work.
Great. Thank you, David.
So it looks like we're going to be another week on chapter 10. We're just slow readers. That's all there is to it. But that's the technique we're using. It's called slow reading because it's more apt for us to dig deep into something and get that fruit for each other and to go on. But this is a great class tonight, and I appreciate so much everybody coming. And I look forward to seeing you next week. We'll finish up Chapter 10 and consider going on to Chapter 11. So. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night. Good night.
Thanks, David and Ivan.
It's still tapping.
Okay, so sorry, we should try turning the phone off. We can do that, right?
What do you mean turning the phone off?
And seeing if the tapping goes away on our mics. By saying goodnight to the people on the phone.
Okay, well, maybe what we'll do is we'll come in.